Parenting Junkie.
Hi, and welcome back to the Parenting Junkie, the place to go to love parenting and for parenting from love.
I want to tell you guys about an exploration that we had in our unschooling life recently with my two young children. So this is like a case study of life learning, how it might work on any given topic. And this particular one is dinosaurs. And that happened because we were gifted a pack of dinosaur flashcards that my kids were really excited by and inspired by. So that was what inspired this whole kind of spiral into their learning process about dinosaurs, which kind of started with a creative exploration. And this is it points to how intrinsically motivated they were. They got out the Fimo and they started to build their own dinosaurs, looking at the flashcards and copying the shapes that they saw. And they, of course, were learning really about all the different details that go into various dinosaur species. And this was a form of self-expression. They were personally invested and intrinsically motivated, and this gave them authorship over their learning experience. So rather than going out and buying a bunch of dinosaur toys, which I might have done, in this case I didn't have to because my kids were creating their own toys, their eggs, nests, their flying dinosaurs, etc. And of course, because they were doing this, they were developing the vocabulary that goes along with it, learning what horns were, what frills were, what the crest is, which dinosaurs come in which sizes and which colors and textures and details like that. Now, when you make your own toys, it's kind of like when adults make their own IKEA furniture. You're much more invested in them and therefore much more likely to really play with them for long periods of time, which is definitely what happened in this case, and it's continuing to happen. The toys that they've made themselves, these dinosaurs, they play with endlessly, which is really beautiful to watch. And because there's no schedule imposed by classes, by other children, by pickup times, etc., they can do this for as long as they need to. And they can explore dinosaurs in whatever ways they need to for as long as they need to, which is, of course, a huge privilege and one that we're very grateful to have. But one of the ways that this has manifested is also in the books that they've chosen at the library. So we'll go to the library and they will choose a dinosaur-themed books, whether or not they actually teach them scientifically about dinosaurs. Those are the themes that they're mostly interested in over the past couple of months. And of course, when a child chooses their own books to read and their own theme to explore, they're going to be much more invested in it, and they're going to be motivated to pick up a book and sit down and look at it by themselves for a while, for example. Well, not every kid, but many kids will. And that's the beauty of following their lead on which topic they want to learn. So far from them not learning anything and sitting home all day doing nothing, it's more about me as a parent being able to facilitate and support their areas of interest and kind of keep up with them so that I can provide the materials and experiences that will allow them to learn the things that they need to learn right now. Another way that they explored dinosaurs, for example, was in the TV shows that they watched recently. So some National Geographics and some scientific shows like Walking with Dinosaurs, but also this great cartoon called Dinosaur Train on Amazon Prime, which is a really gentle, non-violent cartoon which gives them a lot of information about dinosaurs and that they really enjoyed watching. So that worked well. Another thing that we've been really lucky in being able to provide them is trips to natural history museums, and this one, for example, where they could climb on the dinosaur sculptures, and Field Station Dinosaur in New Jersey, which is like a life-size dinosaur zoo where they have 18 different animatronic dinosaurs that actually move and make noises, and you can really learn a lot about the dinosaurs there, which is really, really interesting. Were able to do a fossil dig where they got to use real tools to dig real fossils out of the dirt, which was another great experience. So you can see how with unschooling, you just kind of follow this lead. And I can only really tell you about this quote-unquote unit in retrospect. Now looking back, I see, oh, we've just kind of completed a unit about dinosaurs, if you like. But really, it's just about naturally following what interests us and what is available in our environment right now.
If you want more from me on mindful parenting, head on over to theparentingjunkie.com and sign up for email updates. Keep on loving parenting and parenting from love, because your kids need you almost as much as you need them.
Parenting Junkie.
Sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network. On the ConsciousResistance.com and TheSeedsOfLiberty.com. So Peaceful Anarchism is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. This allows for reuse for people other than governments and the agents thereof. You can find out more information for that at BIPCOT.org. So today we have Avital Shriver, Levy, right? Yeah.
Yep.
coming in close by to me in New York as well, which is very rare for my guests. I have guests like from all over the world. I met her recently at this homeschooling little farm, and it was really awesome, and we connected, and so I'm like, I got to get you on my show. So, so Avital is an unschooling mom of three. She's a vlogger at theparentingjunkie.com. And she's also does mindful parent. She's a mindful parenting coach. You can get lessons from her for that. And she also is working on a course right now called How to Set Empathic Limits. So we're gonna learn more about that. And you can find her stuff on theparentingjunkie.com and on Facebook, The Parenting Junkie. No spaces. Well, hopefully she'll change that, but for now it's no spaces. And then YouTube. Is it The Parenting Junkie on YouTube?
Yeah. I believe so.
And Twitter, Instagram, The Parenting Junkie, Pinterest, Parenting Junkie, Instagram is the_parenting_junkie. So we'll talk about, how she came to unschooling and peaceful parenting and what Parenting Junkie is all about, what she talks about on that channel, and also her course that she's working on now. I think that's a lot of great advice to share with that. So Avital, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so we connected a couple of months ago, and it was really awesome. I don't often meet, first of all, I don't often meet unschoolers and people who advocate peaceful parenting, and then I don't, even less often do I meet people who are content creators with a YouTube channel. And so when I heard that, I'm like, what? No. So, we talked and things happened, and then I'm like, all right, come on my show. So, and I checked out a couple of your videos. I think it was Why I Want to Unschool, and then a bunch of your latest videos. Really awesome stuff. I love it. I think your tagline at the end keep on loving parenting and parenting from love. And then the other one is, because your children need you almost as much as you need them, right?
Correct.
Okay, cool.
Make you remember.
I got it. So please go into a little bit about your history, about how you came into the philosophy of peaceful parenting and why you are attracted to the idea of unschooling.
Sure. So I kind of grew into the ideas of peaceful parenting, and I have a long way yet to grow in implementing the things that I preach, basically. But when I first was thinking about becoming a parent, it really seemed like a not super fun job. Everyone seemed like they were kind of suffering as parents. Do you know what I mean? Now that I have three kids, really, really get it. But parents just always seem so tired and angry and like just wanting to get their kids away from them. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what for? Forget it. I'm not going to have kids.
Right.
And then when I decided that I would want children, I realized that there's got to be something a little bit different about it. It can't just be constantly this inner struggle of control. And now I know to pinpoint what that feeling was, a feeling of out of control and needing to grasp at that control the whole time. And so I started reading a lot about parenting, and I was very lucky to stumble across the right blogs and the right thought leaders, people like Janet Lansbury of RIDE, Dr. Laura Markham of Peaceful Parenting, Alfie Cohn of Unconditional Parenting, Dr. Shefali Tabari of The Conscious Parent, Dr. Peter Gray, all these different writers who, you know, I kind of devoured their stuff. I was just like, oh my God, you know, and my mind was just being blown. Like one myth after the other was just disintegrating before my eyes about what it means to be a parent and what the dynamic is between parent and child. And that was how I started, and that's how I'm continuing. I continue to educate myself on a regular basis. I continue to fail miserably at a lot of my goals, but that's how we learn, right?
So basically, what you're saying is because you read all these books, now you're a perfect parent.
Exactly. I've got it down. Yeah.
I was just kidding. Yeah, we were talking about this before. How it's funny that we get criticized a lot because it's like, what do you think you know? You think you know more than the teacher? Like, how can you teach better than somebody who got a master's degree and you know, teaches in schools, right? You know, what do you think? You're so arrogant. You think you know everything? And the whole idea to me is that the irony is that, no, actually, I'm humble enough to recognize that, no, I don't know everything. And I don't think anyone knows everything that what a child should know. And nor should they, because every child is different. Every child has different interests and needs and curiosities. And so what's good and right for one child is not good and right for another child. So there's no way that you can standardize that or learning. There's no way.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that you can standardize learning. You can, just at a huge cost.
Well, yeah. You can, right. You destroy the potential of what might have been by telling them that this is what you need to learn, this is what you need to memorize for the test. And yeah, you're right, it does have a huge psychological cost. I mean, I can see going so far as saying that submitting your child to government school for 12 years is akin to child abuse, right? Because it is the choice is not left to the child. You know, it's like consensual lovemaking is called love. Non-consensual lovemaking is called rape, right? Now, what is it with the brain and with consensual learning, learning what you actually want to learn and then learning what you don't want to learn and that you're forced to learn? You know, what is that called? Yeah. What, you know, and the only thing I can think of is indoctrination, because it's not learning, because learning is voluntary. You learn something because you want to learn it, not because somebody told you to learn it.
Right. I hear that. And I've heard schools called, you know, prisons, only that in prisons, people get to choose what they do with their time.
Right.
So, you know, and also people who are in prisons have usually done something wrong.
Right.
But you know what? I think that is all valid. And when I read those ideas by, you know, writers like Alfie Cohn, for example, or John Holt, I connect to them. But I would like to advocate for unschooling for the love of unschooling.
Right.
Yeah. For the love of, you know what I mean? Because I'm very conscious, because everybody around me, all my friends and family, send their kids to school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm very conscious of, as an unschooler, and this is kind of a message that I sometimes give to other unschoolers, is I'm very conscious of not alienating school-going children, because I think that there will be some of us, like you and I,
right,
who, at least for the time being, are comfortable saying, I'm opting out. I'm really going the, you know, quote-unquote radical route, and I'm experimenting, if you like, on my own family, of course. This isn't the experiment, right? School is really the experiment. But,
right, exactly.
Right? So some of us are going to be comfortable going that route, and some of us are going to have the privilege of doing that, and others are not. And therefore, my hope is that these elements of child-led learning, of respect for a child's innate motivations, etc., is going to trickle through, hopefully, to some kind of revolutionized, do I call it school? I don't know. System that all children can benefit from. That's I think the real hope. So I think that the hope is that unschoolers will lead this process from the front, but that, you know, the masses of children who are being indoctrinated, if you like, will hopefully get some of that, get in on some of that too. And I think one of the most amazing ways that's happening is through the democratic school system, who, you know, these schools have proven their worth even in the standardized measurements, which is what most people do care about.
Mm. When you say democratic schools, you mean like the Sudbury Valley School, like those kinds of?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Where the students have the ability to, you know, influence like rules and have decision making or talk about if there's
an unschool school.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. There's complete freedom, and learning is self-directed completely.
Are you familiar with Brett Vanat and the School Sucks podcast? He's been running that for years. He's really done an awesome job. I met him once. I've interviewed him once. Really awesome guy. But one thing he said was that one misnomer that maybe we should stop using is using the word school, because every time somebody hears that word, they immediately think in a building, desks and chairs, books, quiet, listening to a teacher. So when you're like, I do homeschooling, you're like, wait. So they sit in a desk and a chair
at home?
Right,
exactly.
You know? And so it's a confusing term. So he says maybe we should say something like home education or life-led learning or passion-led
learning,
which is what I like to tell people. And I also stumbled upon this podcast. I don't know if you heard about it, by Amy Childs. You heard of her? She has this podcast called The Unschooling Life. And she interviewed a big personality in the unschooling world, I think, Sandra Dodd. You familiar? I don't know if she wrote any books, but she's pretty big.
What's his name? It's doing a bell, but I probably just come across it in my feed. I get a lot of unschooling stuff in my Facebook.
Yeah, so she, one thing that she was talking about in one episode was that the idea of learn nothing holiday or learn nothing day. And so it's kind of a joke in that if you tell a parent with a child in public school and the child, okay, we're going to do learn nothing day. You know, the child is like, wee, yay, I'm so happy. And then the parent's like petrified, like, what? How can you do that? That's horrible. Every day you need to be going to school learning something. And so when you tell that to an unschooling mother or a child, they're like, that's so stupid. What are you talking about? We learn every day. How can you not learn one day? That's impossible. And they're saying that, like, even if you, you know, that, like, one unschooling mother is telling the child, she's like, what if I, lock you in a room and turn off the lights and don't give you anything to do? She's like, I'm still gonna learn that I don't like to be locked in a room with the lights out. I'm always learning. This is impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, that's exactly. I mean, that really points out the difference in definition, really. I guess, right, in how we think about what does it mean to be. I'm just reading Alfico's book. What does it mean to be well educated? Mm. Right. What does it mean to be well educated? Does it mean that there is a predetermined list of facts and figures that you are able to, you know, produce on a test? Is that what it means to be well educated? And what does learning mean? Also, I think really critical. Yeah. Again, is it just about remembering somewhat random, you know, list of facts and figures, or is there a much deeper process that has a lot more meaning for our kids? I'm betting on number two.
Yeah, I think it's completely arbitrary. Like, you know, just think about all the bits of information in history, right, that have been created and stumbled upon by scientists and inventors and entrepreneurs and people who are just, like, intelligent. And then they pick this little sliver of information and tell all the kids, this is what you need to learn to be a successful person in life.
Yeah.
And my question is, how do you know that? Are you a fortune teller? Do you know the future?
Right.
Do you know what the world will be like in 20 years when they're of age where they have to start working? No, obviously you don't. So why would you believe a bureaucrat who thinks that they know what your child needs to learn?
100%. 100%. It's very random. I think the world probably doesn't necessarily even know the information that our children are going to need to acquire for success in the future. Like, we don't have that information yet.
No, we don't.
You know?
No. One example I like to give, I was talking to this woman who sends her kid to school. And when I talk to people who send their kid to school, you know, I try to be understanding, you know, like nonviolent communication, like I try to be gentle in the way I talk about things.
Yeah.
And I give examples, you know, analogies. And so one analogy I like to give is, imagine that you're living, you know, a family's living in the turn of the 20th century, beginning of the 1900s, and you know, the car was just being developed and becoming more mainstream, and the child's like, you know, I want to learn how to drive a car, and then the parent's like, no, you have to learn how to ride a horse, because my parent rode horses, their parents rode horses, everybody rode horses, you need to learn how to, and like, but no, now we have cars. So like you said, there's no way that we can prepare our kids for a future that has not that we have no idea about, because we have no idea what's going to look like, you know, and things are constantly going obsolete, changing, you know, transforming, and so allowing children to investigate and you know, look up and be curious about different things. That's what will be relevant to their future. We have no idea what will be relevant to their future, but what they're curious about most likely will be relevant to their future.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, I think that also touches upon the issue of diversity, because you were mentioning standardization beforehand. It's very frightening to think of a world where everybody holds the exact same set of cards and, you know, they just, you know, all the analogies are so cliche to a factory, but that really is how it's working in many schools.
Right.
I don't think in all. I think there are plenty of schools that develop some creativity, that, you know, that have a little bit more personal choice and personal accountability, or that put an effort on, you know, an emphasis on social and emotional skills. But by and large, the system, especially in the U.S. and especially the public school system, is going in the direction of further and further standardization and making sure that a kid in Korea and a kid in Texas come out at 18 with the exact same set of skills and the exact same set of facts, which, you know, that's scary because when you look at a healthy town, a healthy community, a healthy global community, we know that we thrive on diversity. We know that we thrive on lots of different people working together in collaboration with lots of different skill sets. So if the system is dampening that so much so that everybody comes out with the same abilities, then, you know, that's worrying.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think one major thing that's undermining the idea of government schooling is the internet, because no longer can you really control the free flow of information when it's so expansive, so lightning fast. You can look up anything, you know.
Yeah.
It's like before the internet, how would you get information, right? You know, from your teacher, from school, maybe from the library. I don't know. You ask your grandparents, you read a book, right? But now you got YouTube, you got Wikipedia, and you got, you know, Google. And so I think that in itself is already rendering government school obsolete. Right, it's a dinosaur institution. It's decadent. It's outdated. You know, it is destined to die. There is no way around it. And I think the more, you know, the kids growing up now that have never experienced life without the internet, they're seeing it's kind of obvious that, like, all this stuff I can learn on the internet, why do I have to need to go to this place where this dry, you know, this teacher's teaching me some dry, useless facts and figures? Like, what's the purpose? You know what I mean?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, when I was in school, the internet wasn't around, so that was how you learn. But even, yeah, I mean, even I would say that there were so many other ways of learning, but yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you on this topic, because I know you did a video on screen time. So what's, so can you share your view on you know, using the internet or computers or electronic devices for the purposes of learning and how you incorporate that with your kids? I mean, they're not, I guess your kids are not like, you know, how old is your oldest, 4 or 5?
My oldest is turning 5. He's still young. Yeah, I think it's a completely indispensable tool. It's integrated into life, especially unschooling life. There's no separation, I think, between technology and learning, for many unschoolers. I hope that we develop a healthy relationship with the screen. I myself am addicted to a screen, I think. I think we all are. You know, it's very hard for me to go 2 hours without checking my email, without just randomly looking again and again at things as if suddenly it's going to, you know, be very exciting. you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to get a message. I must look at this thing. It might ding.
Something might happen.
So yeah, so I have to kick that habit, because I do think that I really want my kids to grow up with long stretches of time in nature and with real people and connecting face to face and real hands on play. You know, I'm grateful that they at the moment are deep in the habit of, you know, play, of real immersive play that can go on for hours and that really grabs their creativity and their curiosity. And we do a lot of artwork and we do a lot of crafting and reading and that kind of thing. So lots of things without the screen at the moment, and hopefully that will continue. But I think the screen is a friend, a very, very good friend to unschoolers. And I fully intend to, you know, give my kids, hopefully at some point, unlimited access. At the moment, that doesn't work for us. Mm. I do think that we have to be vigilant as parents as to what content our kids are consuming. I'm not a whole life unschooler. I don't think that there should be no boundaries or limits. I don't think a six-year-old should be allowed to stumble upon porn or incredibly violent images, and that's, you know, that's their right because they should have access to all information. I think that it's our job as parents to protect them from that. Mm-hmm. I also really think, and research backs me up on this, is that when you experience violence or something through a screen, your brain, you know, our hunter-gatherer brain processes it as if it's reality. And I think that, especially for young children, the differentiation between the screen and reality is so blurred that I am very conscious about too much violence or unkind behavior, because I think that you get really desensitized from that. I know that Peter Gray argues differently, and I so respect him and have a huge parenting crush on him. But when it comes to screens, I just can't buy it. Like, I don't buy that you can sit there shooting a gun at someone and watching them, you know, die and get pleasure from that kind of violent scene, and that doesn't do anything to your desensitization. I don't buy it at the moment. Maybe I'll be convinced otherwise. I think that we have to be careful. I don't want my kids in front of SpongeBob 6 hours a day. That's a problem for me. I think that that's, for me, that would be negligence. But on the other hand, whenever my kid has a question, I say, let's go look it up. And I'm not teaching him to use an encyclopedia. I'm teaching him to look it up on the web.
So you're saying you're not a closet Counter-Strike or Halo player?
Just kidding.
Well, if I was, I wouldn't be telling you that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, this technology is new. It's developing. You know, we don't have experience with it. We're learning it. And, you know, like, when I was young, I don't know how much TV you watched, but I did watch some TV and I enjoyed it. And then I had little video games when it came out. It didn't consume me, right? Like, I had other interests. I had, you know, I loved chess and piano and philosophy and music and learning about different things. And so it was just one way to relax. Kids respond to these things in different ways. Some, I guess, you know, some kids have what, you know, we would say is addictive personalities, can't, limit themselves in certain things. But then again, you know, like, it's like, how do you say this? It's like, even as a lot of adults, some adults who are like have addictive personalities, like,
sure.
I mean, what do you do with them? Like, that's what they want to do. That's what makes them happy. That's what makes them happy. You know, I mean, I accept mm-hmm. that as children, you know, we're responsible for our kids. Right. And every parent draws the line differently. Right. Like how much do you interfere with your child's life? Like, you know, when I talk about peaceful parenting and this kind of stuff, a lot of parents have this idea that, like, you know, I think what you said, like the radical person, just, you know, let your kid do whatever, right. As long as they don't kill themselves to walk off a cliff, let them do whatever. And and I wouldn't say that I do that, but what I tell people is I don't tell people how to act. I don't like to tell people what to do. I don't like to give people, you know, this is the manual that will explain every single thing that you need to do in every single situation. Yep. No, what I give to people is principles. and you mm-hmm. apply those principles to your own specific situation, right? Your mm-hmm. specific and unique children, and you make the decision when to not abide by those principles and when to break right. them. And it's different for everybody, right? And so it's completely fine when you say that, you know, you read these authors and you agree with them on this, but you don't agree with them on that. That's great.
Right.
You know, because to me, that signifies that you're not just blindly believing these people because they wrote it down. Like, you're believing it because you, in your heart, really understand it. And you're like, I like this, but I don't like this. Right? So I think that's beautiful.
Why, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the essence of mindful parenting, right? Is being a little bit deliberate and intentional about our choices wherever we can be. So gathering the information, getting inspired by these resources that we have, and then really listening to our own intuition as well. I try to practice what I preach. I don't always manage, but I try.
That's the other thing. You know, I think we, I think we really try to be consistent. You know, that's why I, apply what I with parenting. I apply it to people, and I apply it mm-hmm. to businesses, and I apply it to everything. You know, treat people with respect because that's how you like to be treated. The golden rule, but also a friend of mine was telling me that's not always accurate because, you know, what if a masochist likes to be tortured, then
right.
so maybe he says there's something called the silver rule. I don't know if you heard of this, but don't treat others the way you don't want to be treated. I thought that was interesting.
How about treat others the way they want to be treated?
But how do you know? That's the thing. How do you know how others want to be treated? Hi, how you doing? How do you want to be treated? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. How would you like to be treated? What would feel good to you?
Today.
That's a great conversation.
And then tomorrow I'm going to ask you again. So the way I explain, you know, how I parent is, I like to, I want my relationship to be like a friend, like a peer, right? And and not like you know, superior or inferior, or you know, authority and subject. You know, I don't want that because I already recognize that as adults we are already, you know, older, stronger, and bigger, right? And we already have this advantage over our kids, who, by the way, have not chosen to be our children, right? We chose to be parents; they didn't choose to be our children.
Right.
So they have no choice in the matter. We're the ones with the obligation, the acquired obligation. Therefore, it's up to us. It's our duty to give them a childhood such that if they did have a choice between other parents, they would willingly choose us. So that's how, encapsulates how I like to parent.
I think that's beautiful. And I think that it's, I love that you say that you want to be your kid's friend. I just saw this very angry YouTube mom saying, I am not your friend, I am your parent.
Right.
And I think it was first Alfie Kohn who pointed out in one of his books, I forget which, where he was saying, probably Unconditional Parenting, where he said this dualistic approach to friend and parent, you know, either I'm your friend or I'm your parent, as if you could be an effective parent without being a friend. You know, and I think it was such a great point, you know, saying you can't parent effectively if you're not considered a friend by your child, if they don't see you, you know, as someone they're close to and someone they elect to spend time with.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I'm cautious of falling into the permissive parent trap where you're only a friend, where you're afraid of setting a limit or of saying no, because I think that that's a responsibility we have to our children as the adults, who are stronger, wiser, older, bigger. We just have access to information that they don't have at times. And I think, you know, it's easy when it comes to safety, right? We all know that it's our responsibility to buckle their seatbelt in the car. We all know it's our responsibility, you know, to baby-proof the house. But I think equally, it's our responsibility to set those type of limits in the emotional realm, in the educational realm, in et cetera, et cetera. In other words, I think as unschoolers or as peaceful parents, if we let our kids grow up without basic manners, without knowing how to read and write, without basic skills, without knowing how to maintain a healthy relationship and a healthy body, and, you know, just really the basics of being a good person and living a good life, the way we define it, right? We only have our own definition. Then I think that we're also being negligent. So I think that we have to both be their friend and also be their guide, if you like. You know, sometimes I think of it as if I was dropped into a completely strange country right now where I didn't speak the language and I didn't know the culture and I didn't know the laws and the customs and the norms, but I had this really amazing guide by my side who was able to, you know, just point out the pitfalls, help me read a map, translate some things for me, right? So, no, our kids are not in a foreign land. They are entrenched in our culture. They're not aliens. But in many respects...
Are you sure? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I don't know about your kids. Yeah. I'm saying, look, in many respects, we need to hold their hand and teach them things and show them things and guide them. Now, having said all of that, the flip side to that is that I consider my kids my greatest teachers. There is so much more raising of me than there is of them going on in this equation, right? I need to raise myself so much more than I need to raise them. That's like if I had to divide the parenting pie into how much of the focus needs to be on me and how much of the focus needs to be on them in terms of molding and shaping and self-work, I take 90%. I take the lion's share. Because at the end of the day, it's really all about my levels of awareness and consciousness and mindfulness that need to come into play in our relationship much more than, you know, they're going to learn. They're here. They're going to learn. But what will they learn is, you know, I'm the one exposing them to that, right? So every time I yell and every time I get aggressive and every time I lose it, I'm teaching them. I'm teaching them very effectively, right? So I think that at the end of the day, in that sense, they're the teachers because they are bringing to my awareness in a very active way all the things in me that I need to resolve.
Yeah, and I think one phrase that comes to mind is basically be the example of the parent or the adult that you want them to be. Right, you act the way you want them to act, right? Because they listen more to actions than they do to words.
Totally.
You know, the horrible, 100%. the worst advice that a parent can say is, you know, do as I say, not as I do. Right?
Yeah.
Completely
that
contradictory.
That just never happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree. I think you have to be the example. And I think it goes even bigger than just being the example outwardly. I really believe that what we do on every level, like you said, how you treat a business, how you treat other people, you know, it's not enough to be a peaceful parent with your kid.
Right.
You work on you. You get to where you want to be in terms of your health. Are you consuming junk food? Are you consuming the screen too much? Mm-hmm. You know, are you being disrespectful? Are you not cleaning up your own messes or getting places on time or learning things you need to be learning? Well, you know, how about you? So when you're all sorted out, then you can start picking on your kids.
Not getting places on time. You know me too well. it's so important to really focus on ourselves. You're right. And one thing that came to mind was when people say, you know, how are you going to socialize your kids if you don't send them to school, right? They're not going to learn how to socialize with other people. And the same exact way, they see how you interact with other people, and that's how they learn. And so, you know, I see my kids, you know, because, you know, every time I meet somebody, you know, I like to talk to people and ask them questions, and some people say too many questions. I'm an inquisitive person.
Never.
What can I say? So I know you would never complain about that. But anyway, so people say that to me, and but my kids have no fear, like as with authority. Like they go up to adults and they talk to them basically as equals, and they say, "My name is Marcus. I'm 6 years old, and that's my sister Serena." And so many times I've seen other kids that are very timid and quiet. And I think to myself, like, what must the home be like if this child is like that? You know, and it kind of scares me, you know, or especially when kids are so obedient, like parent says, sit there, be quiet. And the child sits there for like, I don't know, 20 minutes, you know, and no child like 4 or 5 years old should, should be sitting quietly for like 20 minutes as they're told. You know, it's just children don't do that, right? And so it kind of scares me when they do. But yeah, so socialization, it's just completely ridiculous. Like if they just see you interacting, that, you know, they learn.
I heard a great quote about socialization, which was, you know, who are the people least qualified to teach an 8-year-old boy how to become a man? Other 8-year-old boys.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Don't stick him in a room with all the 8-year-old boys.
Right.
Show him, you know. Yeah, I think we miss out a lot on socialization in schools. Where, you know, I signed my kids up for a preschool this year, and they didn't end up going. But when I came, they were like, well, this is the older twos and this is the younger twos. And I was like, what, you're separating older twos from younger twos? God forbid that the older twos should have to wait a little bit to accommodate the younger twos' needs.
Right.
And God forbid that the younger twos should learn from older twos, you know, not to mention learn from 16-year-olds. Like, it was just, you know, it was a shame. I was like, oh, they're missing out, you know?
Yeah, we hang out with a bunch of homeschooling families and people who are just generally critical of the schooling system. You know, some of them sent to Waldorf school, Montessori school, you know, different things like that. And so there's a wide range of kids, you know, from like 9 years old all the way down to like, you know, 1.5 or 2. And I love it. It's awesome. My daughter, who just turned, she's going to turn 4 in August. You know, there's not too many girls in the group, so the 9-year-old girl immediately connected with my daughter, and my daughter loves her, and she's always like, you know, and the daughter, the older daughter, she was kind of left out because there's not many older kids, but she loves my daughter, and they're always hanging out together, holding hands, and my daughter wants her to pick her up.
I love the idea of kids just playing by themselves as much as they want to, but I think that they should have access to an adult social group. I think it's a big loss in how we live today, you know, very just like isolated in our homes, and then, you know, you go to work, go to school, come back, and you don't just have that kind of clan, which is, I think, how humans were kind of wired in a hunter-gatherer setting.
Yeah,
I think it's a big loss.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to point out also is the idea that it's not really about what we teach our kids. This is my bent on unschooling. It's everyone's like, well, what if they don't learn math and history and chemistry and science and biology? What if they don't learn that? And for me, the focus is not on the knowledge, the particular bits of knowledge. That's not what's important to me. For me, what's important is to maintain a fascination and a curiosity in life. That's what's important. A love for learning. You know, self-motivation, self-direction, being an autodidact. Because if you have that, if you have self-motivation, you don't need somebody behind your back with a whip, you know, saying, read the book, you know, you're going to take a test, or if you don't do that, you're going to be punished, you know, you don't need that, you know, you're self-educated, and, you know, the possibilities just open up so much more. And so that's what I strive, as well as, you know, in addition to maintaining and developing a strong bond between me and my children of trust, that you know, that if they have any problems in life, that they would trust you enough to come to you first, because they want, because they look out, because they trust in your knowledge and your insight and your experience, right? And so if they don't, if they fear you, or if they want to hide things from you, they're just going to find someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's a great point. It's very difficult to protect a trust between a parent and child whilst you are, you know, forcing them or subjecting them to punishments, to coercions, to rewards, all of that stuff is, I think it really erodes trust. I definitely think so. And I think even as peaceful parents, we probably, you know, you got to work double time. To prove to your kids again and again that you're in their corner.
You know what's so beautiful? When your children, for no particular reason, out of the blue, you didn't ask, they just come up to you and say, I love you. I like you.
Aww.
I know it happens to you, right? And it's like you're not even expecting it, and my daughter, she just comes up to me and she hugs me. I love you, Daddy. I'm like, oh my God.
One of my favorite things to do with my son, and he's this kind of kid. He likes to have these kind of conversations. But you know, especially like when I'm snuggling with him in bed and I'm just tucking him in and everyone's calm and at the end of the day. And sometimes I'll say to him something like, you know, I want you to know that the most important job that I have, the most important thing to me is to be a good mom to you. So will you just tell me if you think I'm not doing it right?
Right,
you know, right. I really want to get that job right. I really hope that when you're grown up, you'll look back and say, my mom was a great mom. that's right. Really what I'm hoping you'll say. That, you know, that will be it for me. So I try to get that feedback from him starting from now, you know. And sometimes he'll say to me, usually he says, you know, yes, you're a great mom and it's wonderful. Sometimes he'll be like, you know, you're a great mom, but this morning you weren't such a great mom.
Oh,
and he'll explain to me why, you know, I didn't like it. So sometimes it's like, oh, you didn't let me watch TV or something. And I'll be like, yes, sweetie, you know, part of my job as a mom is to keep you safe and healthy. And sometimes I have to say no. But sometimes he'll say things like, you didn't speak to me respectfully.
Oh,
and I'll be like, right,
wow.
You're right. Thank you for pointing that out. I'm going to work on that. And what I love about this kind of candidness, this kind of equality, you know, even though I don't see it as a fully equal relationship, but as much as possible, is that he'll often critique me in that way and in the way that I have spoken to him. You know, it's really the best, apropos modeling, you know, and being the example, it's really the best, you know, proof in the pudding when he will turn around to me and be like, something like, you know, he'll say, I don't like how you're expressing that. Can you ask me nicer? Or he'll say, I don't feel respected right now. Or he'll say, it's my body, so it's my decision. And kind of, you know, sentences that he's heard me say to him or about him, and then he'll say it back to me, which is really great. He puts me in my place, and I appreciate that.
You know, I think this is the second or third time that I've cried a little bit during an interview because it's so beautiful. Because, you know, and you know what? I've interviewed many people on various different topics, but only on, you know, people who do the peaceful parenting and unschooling, the way they describe their relationship with their kids, it's just, I don't know, it just gets to me. it's like how much time would pass before, you know, an authoritarian parent would ever ask their children, how am I doing? You know, for feedback. How much time has to pass, right?
Right.
And it's so sad. And to me, it demonstrates, you know, an insecurity and a lack of humility, in that they really don't know what they're doing, but they're putting up this false veneer that they do, and they don't want to show their weakness, right? Nobody wants to show their weakness.
You know, I learned from Brené Brown primarily, who's a vulnerability researcher, that the biggest strength is in being able to be vulnerable. And I really remember that. I carry that with me very, you know, forcefully, because I feel like that is true bravery. True bravery is showing how vulnerable you are and exposing that vulnerability. And it's always more effective in a relationship when you're able to expose that vulnerability, because almost all anger, I think all anger, right? I think of anger as the most kind of corrosive of emotions within a relationship. And because when we're angry, we get defensive and we get offensive. So we attack and we defend, and it's just so pointless, because at the end of the day, we all just want to feel worthy of unconditional love. That's the bottom line here. You know, that's why kids are acting out. That's why parents are acting out. We all just want to know that we're okay, that we're worthy of some love. And I feel like if you can cut through that anger, if you can say, oh, you know what, I'm getting really angry, I'm getting triggered, I'm getting defensive, or I'm attacking you, but really the reason is because I feel vulnerable. Really the reason is because I don't know what I'm doing, or because I feel worried that I'm doing the wrong thing, or et cetera, et cetera. Really, you can expose that vulnerability even to very young children. I have found it's such a like a magic bullet, you know. It just propels you to the next level in the relationship, where you don't get stuck in that power struggle. You kind of cut through that clutter and you get to the real, you know, the real connection, the root of what's going on. And sometimes, like, if me and my son Eli will get into some kind of power struggle, or I'll be telling him and he'll be telling me, and, oh, you're such a mean mommy, well, you drive me crazy. And then I'll just be like, you know, Eli, I'm just talking in such a rude way to you, and the truth is, I'm exhausted, and that's my fault, because I went to bed too late last night. I know I have a baby who wakes me up, and I still went to bed late, and I'm feeling like a mess up because the house is such a mess, and that's gross for me, and I don't have the patience or the time to tidy it enough, and you're telling me you don't want to do something that's so important to me, and I'm having trouble letting go of that. I'm having trouble letting go of my agenda for you right now. And then I say all of that, and I know that so many people will tell me, hey, that's too many words for a four-year-old. You're being too wordy. You're explaining too much. But if he turns around to me and says, I know, Mommy, you're having a hard day. It's really my fault. I shouldn't have spoken to you that way, and I should have just helped you clean up the Lego. I'm sorry. And then we have a big hug.
Wow.
Then I know that it's okay. It wasn't too many words. You know what I mean? You get it.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think vulnerability is the biggest bravery for us as parents. And I just want to touch on one more thing. You said about authoritarian parents, how much time would pass for them to say that kind of thing. I once read a wonderful blog post, very famous blog post. It's got millions and millions of hits. You'll find it easily. About, I think it was 5 deathbed regrets. There's a woman who works with people on their deathbed, and she saw a common theme that keeps coming up. And I often think about that post and about people's regrets about their relationships and about not being vulnerable enough or not taking chances or not being brave enough to be their true selves. And I kind of think about that on a daily level because I'm a bit of a morbid person. I'm a morbid person. Yeah,
I never would think of that of you.
To say. Well, I'm morbid in the sense that I'm very aware of my own mortality and everyone else's mortality.
I see. Okay.
And I'm very aware that any interaction or any day might be my last. So that gives me kind of a good energy of like being like, okay, let's make it work, you know. This is what I'm going to be remembered for. I often have the narrative in my head that I might die before my kids grow up.
And oh, my like, God. Really?
Listen, I hope it won't happen. Right?
Oh.
But it's a thought that helps me. It helps me because I often think like, okay, what memory of their mom will they have? Like, what energy will they take with them? You know, like, what will their early childhood experience give them in their life? And when I think about it that way, then I'm able to make each day count better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so with the regrets, I think that it's really important not to reach the end of our parenting lives, you know, not to reach our deathbeds and then look back and be like, oh, baby, I wish I was kinder to you, or I wish I was more connected to you, or I wish I spent more time with you, right? But to be brave in the moment with all the challenges, the financial challenges, the emotional challenges, all of that. A lot of people, when I tell them I'm homeschooling, they say, I could never do that. And it's true. Many people perhaps couldn't. But if you know, I really wish I could say to them, this is kind of what I wish I could say, was like, you could. You could if you wanted to. And you can open your mind to that option in case you want to. It's not for everyone, but in case you want to, don't let it slip by you with the idea of I could never, you know?
Yeah, awesome points. I did not know about that. So think about your mortality. Yeah, I can see how that would, you know, give you impetus to, you know, constantly improve yourself and strive for excellence, which is wonderful. You know, the way I think about it is, you know, because my wife constantly asks me, why are you doing this podcast and this YouTube channel and this website? It's not making us any money. What are you doing it for? It's not for the family.
Right.
And the way I look at it is this is my way of improving the world, of providing education, giving my thoughts, sharing my thoughts, and also providing a testimony or chronicling my thoughts. It's like a snapshot of how I think now so that, you know, when my kids are older, they can, you know, look back and how was he at that time, you know, and was he inconsistent? Was he, did he constantly change his view? And, you know, and I think that's I think that's helpful, right? For kids to see that. So,
great resource. Totally.
Yeah, it's a great resource. And I think it compels us to be more consistent, in our own thoughts and strive to be, you know, more rational, more compassionate. And so, so I feel like, you know, you're doing a wonderful thing with your channel, educating people, you know, like you said, I think you said in another interview that one of the reasons you made the channel was because you kept finding yourself explaining over and over and over again, you know, your philosophy, and you're like, I just told the last person, can you just talk to them, please? I don't want to explain this again. Just call that person. So yes, if you make these short videos, and actually now I'm starting to make short videos, by the way, so because I recognize some people. I recognize some people don't want to watch 1 hour or hour and 15 minute videos, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, short attention span and everything. So it's a wonderful thing to just increase the education, you know, put more knowledge out there. How can that be a bad thing? It can't be a bad thing.
Yeah. Right. And you know what? That quote that they say, you teach what you most need to learn, that really guides me in creating content, because I really feel like I want to put this out there. And my most fulfilling moments, apart from the moments with my kids, like in my work, my most fulfilling moments is when I'll have a real heart-to-heart with another parent and we'll move to another level. Like, they'll be like, oh, yeah. And they'll come away feeling, like, refreshed and, like, there's a new direction that they could try with their kids and that they could feel better about it or whatever. Like, you know, just spotlighting, giving insight. But I think the real reason that I started a YouTube channel, to be honest, is to out myself in a way. Like, to be, like, to come out of the closet and be like, hey, you know what? This is actually what's in my mind. This is actually what I'm thinking, to be honest. And to hold myself accountable, because now that I am a parenting vlogger, you know, I need to live up to what I'm talking about. And I don't always, but it really makes me feel like I have to be a lot more accountable. So I try. And I have this kind of image in my head, two images, which scare the living daylights out.
Wait. One is, do they have to do with death? No.
Sorry?
Do they have to do with death? No.
No?
Okay, I'm trying to make sure. All right. We got the death out of the way. All right, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
One is, someone will, like, wire up my house with spy cameras, and they will see how I really parent some of the time.
Really?
And they'll be like, oh my God, she's such a hypocrite.
She's a fake. Listen,
she's such a fake.
Unsubscribe.
I saw her yelling. I saw her slamming the door.
Thumbs down.
That's one fear. And the second fear is that my kids will grow up, and they'll, like, go on social media of, you know, 2030, whatever that will look like, and they'll be like, she was awful. Or, you know, she's not the parenting junkie, she's the parenting junk. And, you know, I don't know, whatever they're going to say.
Oh, man.
I just made that up, but that's pretty good, right? I hope they use that.
Maybe. I have to say, when I first heard the name of your channel, I didn't really understand. It's not obvious to me what it's about. And I don't know if you did that intentionally, but I'm like, parenting junkie. She's addicted to parents. Is that good? I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's open for interpretation.
Right.
they have
to look through your videos.
It's missing the peaceful parenting element, which is a shame in a way. Like, I would like people to know that straight away, but. I wanted to leave it open enough. You know, when I started the Parenting Junkie, I wasn't homeschooling, for example, and suddenly that's a big part of it. Like, I wanted to leave it opening enough. It's basically just, I'm addicted to learning, and I have a mild obsession with parenting, with all things that are related to the parent-child relationship, you know, from diapering through school. So I wanted to allow myself to touch on all of those topics.
So you mentioned two things. So one with the cameras and looking if you, and the other one was in the 2030, what do you call it?
My kids will come back and tell the world that I was not a good parent. Yes.
All right. So, so do you want to wrap up and just share how people can get in touch with you if they want to find out more about your work?
Sure, absolutely. Well, they can email me at avital@ theparentingjunkie.com. The Parenting Junkie. Junkie is JUNKIE. Probably best is on YouTube or Facebook, or on my website, which is theparentingjunkie.com. You can just go to the contact area there. And I would love to hear from people. Absolutely. I love to gather ideas for my upcoming videos, so please send them in. And self-promotion, I'm going to put a big fat plug for my upcoming course, which I'm really excited to publish, which is all about setting empathic limits. So I am an unschooler. I am a peaceful parent. I do believe in setting limits and finding that you know, zone that is not punitive and not permissive. But how we do that is so beyond us, because none of us have seen it done. We were mostly raised by authoritarian parents and some of us by permissive parents, but we didn't see parents who were able to set limits in a healthy way, but not without empathy and kindness. So that's something that I'm really excited to launch pretty soon, hopefully September.
Great. So everyone, please check out her YouTube channel, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anywhere you can find her. Her website, theparentingjunkie.com. Check her out. She's putting out some awesome content. Wonderful person. Please like and share and subscribe her videos.
Thank you so much, Danilo, for having me on. It's been such a pleasure to chat about this.
No problem.
Hopefully many, many more conversations to come.
Yes, we will. We will get you back on. I'm sure there's more to tell. So thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network, theconsciousresistance.com, and theseedsofliberty.com. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.